Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. Please check out the podcast that was sent on Saturday night, which is a special podcast about Pesach. This podcast by Rabbi Meir Schweiger is on the Parshat Acharei Mot. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as a Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry, for the introduction. I would like to take this opportunity to wish Larry Mazal Tov on his recent marriage to Josie. May the two of you be blessed with many years of happiness and good health. And may your marriage be a further step in the rebuilding of the Jewish people and Jerusalem. This week's parsha is Parshat Acharei Mot. It is also known as Shabbat HaGadol. Shabbat HaGadol is the Shabbat before the celebration of Pesach. Why is it known as Shabbat HaGadol? Many explanations have been given. Perhaps the simplest explanation is connected with the Haftarah from the book of Malachi, the very end of the section of the prophets, where the concluding verse says, I am sending you the prophet Elijah before that big day will come. The big day being a reference to the coming of the Mashiach. The day when there will be this dramatic transformation of the world, what could be viewed as the final redemption. A second explanation. It is called Shabbat HaGadol in contrast with Shabbat HaKatan. The festivals are also called Shabbat. And we see this very clearly when it speaks of the counting of the Omer, which is supposed to happen Mimochorat HaShabbat, the day after the Shabbat, which is really the second day of Pesach, the day after the first day, the festival of Pesach. But the festivals are the little Shabbat, because on festivals, we are permitted to do work which is connected with food preparation, cooking and baking. But on Shabbat, there is a total cessation of work. Hence, it is the big Shabbat, where Shabbat means cessation. I would like to examine our parsha and ultimately connect it with the story of Pesach. Let us begin by looking at chapter 17. Chapter 17, verse 10, which speaks of the prohibition of eating blood. The Torah says, And each man among you, from the house of Israel and from the convert, who shall dwell in your midst, who shall eat kol dam, any blood, I will set my face upon that soul that eats the blood. I will cut it off from the midst of its people. Verse 11, because the soul of the flesh is in the blood. And I have given it to you on the altar to atone for your soul, because the blood which is in the soul is there to atone. Verse 12, and therefore I have said to the Jewish people, each soul among you shall not eat blood, and the ger in your and the convert in your the stranger in your midst shall not eat blood. The prohibition of blood, of eating blood, appears in a number of places in the Chumash. Our section is not the first time that it appears. It appeared earlier in the book of Leviticus, in chapter 3, chapter 3, verse 17. It says, This is an everlasting statute to you in all of your dwelling places. All fat and all blood you shall not eat. And later on, in chapter 7, a similar message is echoed. In chapter 7, verse 26, And all blood you shall not eat in all of your dwelling places. whether of fowl or of animals. Whoever eats all blood, that soul will be cut off from its people. And in fact, earlier in that section, there is the prohibition of eating the fats. Generally, these two prohibitions go hand in hand. Do not eat the fat, do not eat the blood. And in our section, the reason is given. In chapter 17, verse 11, the Torah says, because the soul of the flesh is in the blood, I have given it to you to be on the altar, to be a source of atonement. And then in the next verse, therefore I have told you, don't eat it. The fats and the blood are given on the altar to God. This is part of the process of atonement. And therefore what God is saying is, this is something which is given to me. You have no right to take it. On a certain level, it is sacrilege, overstepping your bounds. I would like to quote another verse, and that is from Deuteronomy, chapter 12. In chapter 12, the Torah discusses a reality where the Jewish people will have expanded borders. And as a result, it will not be easy for people to come to the temple to bring sacrifices. And in the context of sacrificial service, to eat meat. And the Torah acknowledges that people will very well have the desire to eat meat. And to a certain extent, the Torah validates that. And says in Deuteronomy chapter 12, verse 20, when God will expand your borders, and you will say, I would like to eat meat, because you have the desire to eat meat. By the desire of your soul, you shall eat meat. But then the Torah goes on to say in verse 23, only be strong that you do not eat the blood, because the blood is the soul. Do not eat the soul with the flesh. Verse 24, do not eat it. You shall spill it on the ground like water. And in the next verse, do not eat it in order that it should be good to you and your children after you, that you do that which is right in the eyes of God. I always found it intriguing that the Torah should say to people, be strong, do not eat the blood. The imagery that this verse conjures up in my mind is of someone who has this tremendous desire to eat blood. And as I said, I've always found this intriguing. For me, blood is repulsive. In no way is it attractive in terms of its smell. Taste, I can't say anything about. In terms of its aesthetic qualities. And yet the Torah, by saying, be strong, evidently is presupposing a certain attraction that this blood has for people. In fact, we find that in a number of ancient cultures, there was a practice of drinking blood. In some cultures, human blood. In other cultures, animal blood. And this practice is connected with what the Torah itself says, that the blood is the life force, it is the soul. The people who drank the blood felt that they were in effect bringing new vitality to their own souls. If we would use another term, they were expanding their souls by incorporating additional life force. To the extent that in some cultures, drinking blood was actually seen as a way of attaining supernatural power. It is very interesting that the prohibition of drinking blood when taken in that sense, may bring us back to the original prohibition, the first prohibition that was given to humanity. When God said to Adam and Eve not to eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, where the snake says to Eve, "Of course God prohibited you from eating of this tree, because he knows that once you eat from this tree, you will become godlike." And perhaps this was the motivation for eating of the tree of knowledge, to achieve those semi-divine powers, to become like a god, knowing good and evil. I will come back to this point a little bit later. But now I would like to further examine our parsha, chapter 17, the section which comes before the prohibition of blood, which also deals with blood. In the beginning of the chapter, it says, this is chapter 17, verse 3, a similar introduction to how the section of the blood begins. Ish ish mi Beit Yisrael, any man from among the Jewish people who will slaughter an ox or a sheep or a goat in the camp, or who will slaughter it outside the camp, and he will not bring it as a sacrifice to the tent of meeting, as a sacrifice to God, this will be considered as blood, blood which is spilt, and that man will be cut off from his people. And in verse 5, we are given the reason. In order that the Jewish people shall bring their sacrifices, which they would otherwise bring in the fields, they should bring it to God at the entrance to the tent of meeting, to the Kohen. And if I skip to verse 7, and they shall not continue to slaughter their animals to make their sacrifices to the Se'irim, which literally means to the goats, and quite a few commentaries translate as to the demons, whom they go astray after. This shall be an everlasting statute to them for all generations. What is this section prohibiting? Offering sacrifices outside the temple. In no uncertain terms does the Torah say, sacrifices are to be brought to the temple. Do not do it outside the temple. Sacrifices which are brought outside the temple are considered as spilt blood, liable to the penalty of karet. And the Torah says, do not bring your offerings to the goats out in the field. I translated this on the basis of a number of commentaries as demons. It is very clear from the context that there was a cultic practice of sacrificing animals in the middle of the field to the Se'irim. It is also very interesting that we have the juxtaposition between this practice and between the prohibition of drinking blood. One could make the argument that perhaps the two practices actually complemented each other. I would like to make a leap and go back to the story of Jacob and Esav. In Bereshit, in chapter 36, it starts out by saying, these are the generations of Esav. Esav is Edom. And in verse 8, it says, Esav settled in Har Seir. Esav is Edom. Edom and Seir are key words connected with Esav. In chapter 25, when Esav is born, It says in chapter 25, verse 25, "And the first one came out. He was red, completely, like a hairy cloak, ka'aderet se'ar." And they called him Esav. And later on, when Yitzchak wants to give the blessing to Esav, and Rivka convinces Yaakov to fool her father, to fool his father, to quote-unquote steal the blessing, Yaakov says to his mother in chapter 26, verse 11, "Behold, Esav, my brother, is a hairy man, and I am somebody who has smooth skin." Se'ar, hair, and sa'ir seem to be very much connected. And both of those are associated with Esav. Edom, related to the word Adom, red. When he's first born, he's Admoni, he's ruddy. Later on in that same section, in chapter 25, verse 30, Esav comes and says, "Give me to gulp from this red stuff that Yaakov was cooking." And it says, and that's why they called him Edom. And to just throw one other thing into the hopper, when Yitzchak finally gives a blessing to Esav, in chapter 27, verse 40, he says, "You shall live by the sword." This point is very much played up in rabbinic literature. Esav, Edom, Seir is very much associated with death, with killing. When Esav says, "Give me that red stuff to drink," it is a lentil porridge. But the rabbis say that Esav had just come back from the hunt, and perhaps hunting people, and perhaps having killed animals, or even killed people. Esav is now somehow culminating that experience in a cultic type of way, by wanting to drink something red. Obviously, the play on words between Adom and Dam. The point which I'm trying to get to is that drinking blood may have been a practice in various cultures, what we could call a pagan practice. A pagan practice which was associated with empowerment, but empowerment which is very much connected with bloodshed. Bringing sacrifices out into the field to the demons, to the Se'irim, to the goats, may have been occultic worship of demonic forces, forces of evil, forces of death. In fact, one of the ironies, which I mentioned in another podcast, is that on Yom Kippur, the ultimate form of atonement is achieved through the scapegoat who sent out to the field to those demons and thrown off a cliff. Let me try to pull this together in another way. In the end of our parsha, in chapter 18, we have the section of prohibited sexual relationships. And that section is introduced in chapter 18, verse 3, with a statement. "According to the practices of the land of Egypt where you lived, do not do. According to the practices of the land of Canaan, which I am now bringing you to, do not do. Do not walk in their statutes." Verse 4. "Observe my laws, observe my statutes, to walk in them. I am the Lord your God." And in verse 5, and you shall observe my statutes and my laws. And now the key expression, that a person shall do them and live by them. I am the Lord your God. Let me begin with a number of drashot that the rabbis made. One drasha that they make on this verse, when it says, V'chai b'hem, and you shall live in by them, is that if a person is faced with a life-threatening situation, one's life takes precedence over the observance of the laws of the Torah. Based on verse 5, where it says, you shall observe my laws and you shall live with by them. Live in them. If observance of the laws compromises my life takes precedence. And hence the famous rabbinic expression, Pikuach Nefesh Doche Shabbat. That life preservation overrides the observance of the Sabbath. As many people are aware of, if God forbid I am in a life-threatening situation, then I should be brought to a hospital, even though being brought to a hospital will involve violation, desecration of the Sabbath. If I am in a life-threatening situation, I am allowed to eat anything, even if what I'm eating is not kosher. A second interpretation. If one is given the choice of giving up their life or violating the Torah, then the halakha is you violate the Torah rather than give up your life. In the words of the Talmud, Ya'avor va'al yehareg, you should transgress the Torah rather than be killed. If someone were to come and say, eat this piece of pork or I'll kill you, you can go ahead and eat the pork. There are only three situations where one is commanded to give up their life rather than violate the Torah, what are known as the three cardinal sins of Judaism: idolatry, sexual immorality, murder. If one is given the choice of violating any of those three things or giving up their life, they need to give up their life. We will not go into the details of Kiddush Hashem, sanctifying the name of God, but what seems to be the operative principle in our verse is that the laws of the Torah are meant to be lived by. Everything which I have said up to this point is a drash, a rabbinic interpretation, which is perhaps superimposed on the text. If we go by the pshat of the verse, the simple meaning of the verse, is that the observance of the mitzvot, in their essence, is what gives us life. If I jump for a moment to a very famous verse, which we have mentioned on other occasions, in Deuteronomy, chapter 30, verse 15, God says, behold, I have placed before you today life and good, evil, or death and evil. And if I skip a few verses, in verse 19, I am bringing as witnesses today, heaven and earth, life and death I have placed before you, blessing and curse. Choose life, so that you and your seed will live. And in verse 20, to love the Lord your God to listen to his voice, to cling to him, because he is your life and the length of your days, to settle on the land which the Lord your God has sworn to give to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, to give to you. These verses echo the verse in our parsha. The essence of the Torah is life. Life which is very much connected with good. Good which is connected with loving God, clinging to God, because God is the source of life. If I go back to our parsha, and even look at the beginning of our parsha, how does our parsha begin? The very opening verse of the parsha, which introduces the Yom Kippur service. And God said to Moshe, chapter 16, verse 1, God said to Moshe, after the death of Aaron's two sons, when they came near before God and they died, and God says to Moshe, speak to Aaron your brother. Let him not come at any moment to the holy, beyond the curtain, which is another way of saying, let him not go into the holy of holies. Velo yamut, that he shall not die. For in a cloud I shall be seen on the kaporet. God is not interested in seeing Aaron die. God was not interested in seeing his two sons die. God is a God who is interested in life. The beginning of the parsha speaks of the Yom Kippur service. The whole purpose of the Yom Kippur service is to achieve atonement. Atonement which gives us a new lease on life. What I have tried to show, beginning with the prohibition of the eating of blood, is that our parsha is creating a contrast between serving God, which is very much connected with choosing life, with affirming life. Although we may kill animals and bring sacrifices, the purpose is the animal becomes a kind of substitute, a symbol for us, so that we should live. The Torah is very adamant, do not drink blood. The Torah is very adamant, do not sacrifice out in the fields to the Seirim. The Torah is very adamant, do not follow the lifestyle of the Egyptians and the Canaanites. All of those things put on a pedestal death, worship of death, lead to death. How does this connect with the story of Pesach? In the story of the Exodus, God is not interested in seeing the Egyptians die. God is interested in seeing the Jewish people live. In the end, the tragedy is that the Egyptians ultimately die. The Egyptians die because they refuse to recognize God. They refuse to recognize the evil which they have perpetrated against the Jewish people. They are given many opportunities to change, to come to a recognition of good. And yet time after time, they choose evil. The Jewish people take a sheep, a goat, which is sacrificed, the Korban Pesach, and they put its blood on the doorposts. On the one hand, by doing that, the Jewish people are serving God. The Jewish people are somehow, through their service of God, saving themselves. God sees the blood on the doorpost. God passes over them. I would like to suggest another possibility also. The Jewish people could have killed the Egyptians during the period of darkness, but they don't. Instead, they kill the sheep. In a certain way, the sheep is a substitute for the Egyptians. And perhaps that sign is a sign also for the Egyptians, to make them realize what they did to the Jews when they had the power. The blood of the babies that was spilled when they were thrown into the river. And even if the Egyptians did not actually drink the blood, but they may very well have reveled in the death of the babies. And on a certain level are forced to see that they have made water into blood in the first plague. So that if there were Egyptians who in the end drank that water, which has now become blood, it would have been the logical conclusion to all of the evil which they had perpetrated to the Jews. When we celebrate Pesach, we should not celebrate the death of our enemies, but rather we should affirm our life. Affirm our life in a positive way, in service of God, in bonding as families and communities. This is what God asks of us. This is the choice that we need to make. This is what it means to truly be free. One who is free affirms life. Freedom is not achieved by taking away somebody else's life and reveling in it. Freedom is achieved by doing that which is good, by doing that which expresses our service, our sense of purpose. As I mentioned in the very beginning, we read a special Haftarah which looks towards the future redemption. And it speaks of the coming of Elijah the prophet. And it says about Elijah, V'heshiv lev avot al banim, v'lev banim al avotam. When we read the story of Elijah the prophet in the Book of Kings, the image we have is of a zealot. And he describes himself exactly in those terms. Kano kineti l'ashem tzvakot. I was avenging the vengeance of the Lord of hosts, the defender of the faith. He is the one who brings about the death of the false prophets. And one might see that there's a certain element of self-righteousness, of arrogance, of even a bloodlust in being the defender of the faith. That's why this prophecy of Malachi is so important. The image of the final redemption of Elijah the prophet is not of the defender of the faith who will bring about the destruction of all the infidels, of all the heretics, but the image is of Elijah the prophet who will heal, who will bring about a bonding of parents and children. This is our image of the final redemption. In certain ways, the final redemption parallels the original redemption. In the original redemption, parents and children come together in service of God. And this is historically what the Seder has always been. Parents and children who come together, who tell a story, who learn together, who learn from each other. This has always been the strength of the Jewish people. May this Pesach be a time when the hearts of the parents are brought back to the children, and the children are brought closer to the parents, when the common framework that bonds them is their common story, their common tradition of learning and of observance. And may this bring about the final redemption, where in the words of the prophet Isaiah, there will be a tremendous thirst, a tremendous hunger, but not for water and not for bread, but for knowing God. Shabbat Shalom. Chag Sameach.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your emails to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Have a great Pesach, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.